Good morning. I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International from the studios of KBZT, FM 94.9 in San Diego. Tree Huggers International is a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program dedicated to the preservation of parks, wildlands, and special places, from the beaches to the mountains to the deserts. This is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. The Wilderness Society has long been a champion of conservation and the environment, and specifically setting aside those special, last remaining wild places on public lands in the U.S. as wilderness, including lands overseen by the National Park Service, the U.S. Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, and National Wildlife Refuges. Founded in 1935, the Wilderness Society led the way and was instrumental in the creation of the National Wilderness Preservation System and the passage of the 1964 Wilderness Act under President Johnson, which elegantly describes wilderness as an area where the earth and community of life are untrammeled by man, where man himself is a visitor who does not remain. Today, over 100 million acres of federal land, from one end of the country to the other, have been set aside for all Americans as wilderness. And with the passage of the Omnibus Public Lands Act in March 2009, there are now 756 wilderness areas in the U.S. Along with the economic benefits and the rise of wilderness and ecotourism as a result of these special places, wilderness also provides breathing room for watersheds for clean drinking water and for the oxygenated, life-giving benefits of forest environments. And in a way which may not necessarily be quantifiable, wilderness also provides room for humans to not only recreate, but depressurize and reconnect with the ebb and flow of the natural cycles of the earth and the wild. Joining us today to talk about the Wilderness Society and some of their current initiatives is a very special guest, David Edelson, the Regional Director for the Wilderness Society in California and Nevada. Prior to coming to the Wilderness Society, David served as the lead attorney for the Sierra Forest Legacy, in which he helped block the Bush administration's 2004 forest management plan, which would have resulted in significant logging of old-growth forests. David worked at the Natural Resources Defense Council, where he led the NRDC's efforts to improve management of national forests, both in the Sierra Nevada and the Pacific Northwest. David, it is a real pleasure to welcome you here today, and I want to extend not only a welcome to Tree Huggers International, but also a thank you for the work you've done preserving America's wilderness and special places. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I've heard a lot of talking heads and pundits giving these summaries on the alleged disappointments of Obama's first year in office, and yet no one talks about some of the strides the administration has made with the environment. And I've heard no one talk about last year's successful wilderness passage, which was the greatest expansion of wilderness areas in the last 25 years.
President Obama did sign the Omnibus Act, which was a collection of wilderness bills from across the country, and it designated over 2 million acres of new wilderness, including approximately 750,000 acres here in California, some important areas in the San Gabriel Mountains, in the eastern Sierra Nevada, Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park. So it was a significant victory for all Americans, really, who care about wild places.
Do you feel the Obama administration is slowly swinging the pendulum back to where environmental policies at the federal level had been prior to 2001?
Well, we're hearing from the Secretary of Agriculture, Secretary Vilsack, that the priority for national forests, for example, should be forest restoration. So we're hearing good policies from the national level, but it's been a little slow trickling down to the local level. And truthfully, I think 8 years of the Bush administration was pretty discouraging for a lot of federal employees. And it's going to take some time to undo some of the damage that occurred over the last 8 years.
Let's talk about the current desert bill, which Senator Dianne Feinstein is backing. This would create two new national monuments in the Mojave Desert. And I was wondering if you could talk about some of the wilderness attributes about those areas.
These are really outstanding areas in the desert that provide habitat for species like the desert tortoise and bighorn sheep, really outstanding opportunities for outdoor recreation. And Senator Feinstein is suggesting them as national monuments really for the first time through this legislation. She's doing it in a very careful way to make sure that there are opportunities for energy development on lands where that kind of development is appropriate. But these lands with the high qualities that they have are not appropriate lands, so they would be set aside from that kind of renewable energy development.
Yeah, and speaking of renewable energy, I mean, there's been some concerns about solar farms that have been earmarked for some of those lands. How do you address concerns like that? Because my feeling is just slap solar farms on top of giant warehouses and you'll get the problem solved. They don't necessarily have to be in a wild area.
It is a serious issue and a concern that the Wilderness Society is putting a lot of resources in, because we, as an environmental organization, we do want to wean the country off of carbon-emitting sources of energy and to move it towards renewable energy. At the same time, it's important that the areas that we develop are less ecologically sensitive lands. And as you mentioned, there are opportunities in so-called brownfields, areas that have been previously developed. But there are areas also that are closer to transmission lines, closer to highways, where there are fewer environmental conflicts. And those are the areas that we and other groups are trying to steer the solar development to.
Can you talk about the kind of coalitions environmental groups like the Wilderness Society have to put together in order to get wilderness proposals just to the legislative level?
Well, first, it's a basic part of our mission to try to really inspire Americans to care about wild places. And that means everybody. That means people who hike and enjoy an area. Maybe they horseback ride. Maybe they fish or hunt. Maybe they don't even visit an area, but it's just important to them to know that wild places still exist. So at the core of our mission is really trying to inspire and organize ordinary citizens to care about an area, to write a letter in its support. Then on the other hand, you have opinion leaders, you've got county supervisors. So we try to use both the grassroots approach on the one hand and a grass top approach and bring those two groups together in support of the proposals.
Grassroots and grass tops.
Exactly.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
The Sierra Nevada is an area you spent some significant time in while with the Sierra Forest Legacy. Can you talk about current wilderness initiatives there the Wilderness Society is working on?
Well, we had a great success when President Obama signed the Omnibus Act, and that included significant additional wilderness acreage, mostly in the eastern Sierra. In terms of the Sierra Nevada right now, we're more focused on land management and how the public lands, lands that you and I and all Americans own, how those lands are managed. And we want to make sure that they're managed in a way that takes very good care of their values so that future generations can enjoy them. So some of the issues we're working on now involve logging, off-road vehicle use, road building, and trying to improve the stewardship of our publicly owned land so that future generations can enjoy them.
The Bush administration's 2004 forest management plan was a little bit different from the administration's rejection of the roadless rule. Now, when you were with the Sierra Forest Legacy, you really led some legal fights against that plan to keep it from being implemented. My question is, was the rejection of the 2001 roadless rule by the Bush administration, did that sort of enable them to put some of the plans that they put forth in their 2004 proposal?
Well, I would say that they were a part and parcel of a strategy to undo some of the environmental protection that environmentalists had won over many years. The Bush administration was really one of the most anti-environmental administrations we've seen in many years. So whether it was repealing the roadless rule, whether it's oil and gas drilling in the Rockies, or attempts to open up the Arctic Refuge to oil drilling, or weakening the management plan for the Sierra Nevada National Forest, it was all part of a strategy that was intended to promote commodity extraction, unfortunately, at the cost of environmental values. The environmental movement had some success in holding some of that back, and one of the Obama administration's successes in this past year has been to really curtail some of those proposals for oil and gas drilling in very sensitive and highly scenic areas in the Intermountain West.
And can you talk about the Bush administration's 2004 forest management plan? What was the devil in the details, if that's even the right way to put it, you were really taking a stand against as part of the Sierra Forest Legacy?
And the Wilderness Society is part of that challenge, actually. In that case, we still have litigation in court challenging the Bush plan. The problems were severalfold, but to really crystallize it, first, it would increase logging by about five times compared to the pre-existing plan. So just an enormous increase in logging. And second, and just as importantly, it was the logging of the larger trees, really the old growth trees that are already have been severely diminished through logging, there's relatively few left. And those are the trees and the forests that we really want to be protecting for the future.
Around that same time, there was a lot of talk about taking some sizable trees out of the Sequoia National Monument. Was that covered in that 2004 plan?
Actually, it was a separate plan, but that plan also has been stopped in court by groups, including the Wilderness Society and others.
Now, I was recently up in the San Gabriel Mountains, and I saw some areas which are being put forward as potential wilderness additions. And with the longstanding Sheep Mountain and San Gabriel Wilderness areas already there, how do you express the need for these potential wilderness additions and others to skeptics? How do you address it to a group of people who may say, well, you already have this wilderness area here. Why do you need to add more onto this?
If you look at the trends of growth in population in the United States, the amount of wilderness that we actually have protected is relatively small at this point. So the way we think of it, it's really a legacy to future generations. Frankly, it's very doubtful that future generations are going to say we don't have enough wild lands. I think the much greater concern is that virtually all of our lands will have been developed. So as far as striking a reasonable balance, we think we're not really close to the point of having too much wilderness. There's a lot of values in those areas. You've got species like bighorn sheep. You've got extraordinary recreational opportunities, wonderful scenery. And part of why we're excited about it is that the area is so close to urban Los Angeles. And really, it provides an opportunity for people to have an experience of wildness, which in this day and age is increasingly rare, unfortunately.
How does the Wilderness Society approach potential problems that we might be getting ahead of ourselves here of perhaps someday having an entity in power or an administration that seeks to undo some of these wilderness designations?
Well, it actually has not happened to date. Wilderness is one of the few protective designations that has not been undone. And that's part of the reason that we are advocating for that strong of protection. It can't readily be undone. It would take an act of Congress to undo it. And while we don't know what Congress might do in the future, the reality is if you look at the history of the wilderness movement, it's been relatively bipartisan. There's been bipartisan support for the Wilderness Act. There's been bipartisan support for a number of these proposals, including the one you mentioned in the San Gabriels. It's Representative Dreyer, who's a Republican, who is seriously considering introducing a bill to protect those areas. In northern San Diego County, it's Representative Daryl Issa, another Republican. So we don't view this as a Democrat versus Republican issue. The way we're approaching it is to try to build bipartisan support for wilderness.
And we'll definitely talk more about Congressman Issa's proposals in just a couple of moments. But there tends to be a misconception sometimes about wilderness designation. And I suppose we could probably do better to define what it is. But sometimes this is intentional, sometimes not. Many seem to believe a wilderness designation equates a locking up and fencing off of the land, when in fact the designation ideally ensures the land will stay in its primitive state as is. Anyone's allowed to go in there, just strap on a pair of shoes and get off of your machine.
Yeah, there's no limits to access in terms of you can walk in, you can ride a horse in. It's accessible. What there are limits to are kinds of activities that would really weaken the wild nature of those lands. So things like road building, logging, energy development, those are the kinds of activities that are not allowed in wilderness, and for good reason. If we allow those everywhere, then we won't have any wildlands remaining.
Obviously, we have to take things on a case-by-case basis, but is it worth pursuing a wilderness designation for areas which may have been damaged by excessive grazing, careless mining, or unregulated off-road vehicle use?
Well, most proposed wilderness areas would not have suffered from those kind of harms. Really, what we're looking at is protecting the best of what's left. So areas that have been heavily degraded by off-road vehicle use would not be appropriate to be designated as wilderness. Doesn't mean we aren't concerned about those areas. We may well be working to try to modify off-road vehicle use, to try to steer it to more environmentally appropriate areas. But in terms of wilderness, those are generally areas that are pretty wild at this point, and we're hoping that they will stay wild.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International, broadcast from the studios of KBZT, FM 94.9 in San Diego. I'm Tommy Howe, and we're joined in the studio today by the Regional Director for the Wilderness Society in California and Nevada, David Edelson. And we're talking about current wilderness initiatives and legislation in California. If you'd like more information on the Wilderness Society, go to their website at www.wilderness.org. That's wilderness.org. David, a lot of us here in Southern California were really surprised and pleased to see Congressman Daryl Issa in San Diego's North County put forward legislation for an expansion of about 20,000 acres to the Beauty Mountain and Agua Tibia wilderness areas. In fact, you brought in this outstanding map of the areas.
What this would do would be to add to some of the wilderness that was designated in a previous bill in Representative Bono Mack's district in Riverside County. And for political reasons, her proposal didn't cross the county line or the congressional district line, so it led to some arbitrary boundaries. And so we were able to interest Representative Issa through a field trip, and he visited the areas personally, and he could see some of the environmental benefits, and I think also he could see some of the political benefits Representative Bono Mack and other Republicans have received as a result of promoting wilderness legislation. He's starting to see it's not just a Democratic versus Republican issue. There's really bipartisan support for wilderness protection. And also, if you look on a map, and I can't show it to the listeners here, of course, but you'll see that the areas that are proposed will help to create a connected system of reserves stretching from Anza Borrego Park to the coast and also north and south. So it would allow species to move, to migrate, and it would create greater resilience, for example, in the face of climate change if, in fact, temperatures change and the moisture regimes change.
Have you found having wilderness nearby comes to be a point of local pride for residents?
It's a point of local pride, and it's also it can be an economic engine for some communities where there's high rates of joblessness and where the economy is suffering, because some of the local communities can become gateways, essentially, for recreation and tourism. And there can really be some significant economic benefits. We've studied that, and we have used that research to help bring along some county supervisors who didn't know so much about wilderness. And when they see there's some economic benefits of having designated areas protected, they're likely to be more supportive. One area where I think this is starting to happen is the Carrizo Plain and the Carrizo National Monument. That's an area that was relatively little known, and at this point you're finding that some of the local communities nearby are beginning to develop economic development materials and to try to attract people to the area. So I think we're starting to see that kind of increasing local support in areas that maybe were skeptical of the value of wildlands designations.
You know, you mentioned the Carrizo Plain, and I find that to be one of the most fascinating, strange areas of California. And aside from the strange topography and offset streams and scarps present in the area because of the San Andreas Fault, when you enter the area, it really looks like this land that time forgot. You almost expect to see a dinosaur walking around there.
It's extraordinarily diverse in terms of its the biological diversity is really outstanding. There's been a lot of attention nationally and internationally that's been brought to this area. And to its credit, the Bureau of Land Management has put out a draft management plan for the area that would really reduce some of the conflicts that have occurred. They're taking a lot of care, for example, to make sure that off-road vehicles are not used in inappropriate locations because they can really scar the landscape pretty significantly in a fragile area like that.
How does the Wilderness Society address concerns about unregulated off-road vehicle use?
Well, wilderness areas, by definition, there should not be off-road vehicle use. So in those areas, what we need to see is greater enforcement by the federal agencies and really working with the off-road vehicle community to try to steer use to areas that are more appropriate. We think there's a time and a place for all uses of our lands, and there are places that ORV use, off-road vehicle use, is appropriate. And part of what we try to do is to work with the off-road vehicle community to identify places that are less fragile, where such use is more appropriate and can be accommodated without environmental damage.
You went to Dartmouth for your undergrad. and you received your law degree from Harvard. Now, with your academic background, you really have the option to pursue whatever you please. What made you choose to pursue a career caring for the environment and being active with it?
It's because I care deeply about the issues, and I feel very fortunate that I've been able to devote my career to issues that matter personally to me. I'm just very grateful to have had that opportunity and to continue to have the opportunity.
What are some areas in California and in your region in Nevada as well you're really hoping to see, maybe not receive wilderness designation in 2010, but at least increase some awareness of their value?
There's several regions. One is down here in Southern California. We've mentioned some of those. There's Representative Issa's bill in Northern San Diego County. The San Gabriels is an area where we're hoping not only to have additional wilderness designation, but we're promoting the idea of a national recreation area, which would extend actually along the urban streams and into the urban communities. And in that way, we're hoping we can engage more diverse communities, younger people, to appreciate wild places. There's really an urgent need for the environmental community to diversify its membership so that it more accurately reflects the population at large. The Sierra Nevada has been and is an important priority for the Wilderness Society and other groups for many reasons, because it has outstanding recreational values, scenic values, and it's just an iconic area that deserves protection. We're also doing some very interesting work in Northern California, the Klamath Mountains. Folks from Southern California may not be as familiar with that. Up in that region, we still have old-growth forests. We still have runs of steelhead and salmon. We're putting together a plan to protect and restore some of the public lands there. Fortunately, because it's so rugged and wild, there are still significant areas that remain wild. About 25% of the old growth still remains. While that may seem like a low number, it's actually more than in many other parts of the state because it's simply so steep and so rugged. The pieces remain to put together a plan that will allow species and forest ecosystems to thrive, because we still have enough of the building blocks that we can really protect that region and restore some of what's been degraded.
A lot of dams might be coming down there too in the next few years.
Yeah, some dams, and that will hopefully increase the water flows and assist the salmon and steelhead. It's just really tragic what's happened on the Klamath River. It used to be one of the preeminent salmon fishing streams in California and in the world, and at this point, some of those salmon runs are at serious risk of even going extinct at this point. So we're hoping that a combination of getting the water back in the stream, together with doing some of the habitat protection and restoration work that the Wilderness Society has planned, that a combination of those things will help bring the salmon back from the brink.
What sort of skills from your legal background do you find yourself drawing upon in the course of your job that surprises you? What from your legal background makes you go, I never thought I'd be using that?
You know, as lawyers, we're good at arguing, so hopefully we're good at marshaling our facts and making the argument. And whether you're talking to a judge or a jury, or whether you're talking to individuals or a congressman or a congressman's staff, the legal skills help to organize material and present it in a persuasive way. So really, I'm trying to bring those skills to bear to protect some of these important areas, and whether that's trying to convince an editorial board writer or an individual citizen to write a letter or a staffer or for a member of Congress to support a bill, it's all towards the same end.
What does wilderness mean to you?
I think you spoke to it well in your introduction. It's a place where man is a visitor. It's a place where we can go for sustenance of various kinds. And it's an opportunity to get away from our iPhones and our PDAs and our computers and our video screens and have a direct experience of nature. Personally, one of my greatest concerns is when I read about how few young people nowadays are actually having that direct experience of nature. And we need to reverse that trend, because only through having that experience will we develop the kinds of supporters and advocates for wild places that we're going to need in the future.
Yeah, it seems that there is something of a fear-based culture these days, and you can find it on TV and man versus wild and the whole idea of not just outdoor sports, but they're extreme sports. There seems to be some sort of idea conquering is better than enjoying. Do you find that to be the case?
I think it's a tension that, throughout our civilization. I mean, if you just go back and read the Bible, it's a lot about humans dominating nature. But there's also threads as far back as the Bible of being good stewards of nature. So I think that tension is one that we've been living with throughout our history, but the point has become more sharpened now, if you will, because there's so many more people on the planet. We've got to really do a more careful job than in the past of safeguarding the wild places that we have left.
David, when you have some free time and you like to go off someplace in California or Nevada, where do you enjoy going to?
I really enjoy the whole state. One of my favorite places, though, is the High Sierra. The subalpine areas in the Sierra, whether it's in Yosemite Park or Sequoia Kings Canyon or the Great Wilderness areas linking them, the experience of being up in those green meadows with the clean, fresh water flowing by and the peaks surrounding me, that's something that really it does excite me and it really nurtures me. We're always open to questions and we are always encouraging support, so I would invite people to get involved if they care about places, to get involved, to write a letter, to go on a tour or a field trip and really contribute because it's going to take all of us to protect our wildlands.
David Edelson, the Regional Director for the Wilderness Society in California and Nevada, thank you so much for your time today. Again, the website for the Wilderness Society is www.wilderness.org. That's wilderness.org. David, we hope to catch up with you again very, very soon, and we wish you the very best. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
That's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International. Thanks again to David Edelson for joining us, the Executive Director of the California and Nevada Offices for the Wilderness Society. We really appreciated having David here today. I encourage you to learn more about protecting America's last wild places and a number of the areas considered for wilderness designation that we were talking about, including the areas in northern San Diego County and in the San Gabriel Mountains, as well as other areas to the north in the Klamath Range. You can learn more about those areas and the National Wilderness Preservation System at the Wilderness Society's website at wilderness.org, www.wilderness.org. The opinions and views expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the opinions and views of the staff and management of FM 94.9 or Lincoln Financial Media, and as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Questions, complaints, concerns, compliments, go ahead and email me at tommy@fm949sd.com. And for more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, you can also go to the newly relaunched Tree Huggers International website at www.treehuggersintl.com. That's treehuggersintl.com. TreehuggersIn, as in November, TL.com. You can also email me there as well at tommy@treehuggersintl.com. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International from the studios of KBZT, FM 94.9 in San Diego. We'll be back again same time next Sunday morning with another take on natural science and environmental affairs as we continue our mission to preserve parks, wildlands, and special places on Tree Huggers International. Nina Blackwood's New Wave Nation is on the way next on FM 94.9. I'm Tommy Howe. Thanks for making time for Tree Huggers International. Have a great Sunday and a good week. Be well.